Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Shared Spirits,
a comedy true crime paranormal podcast hosted by the best of ghouls who are currently,
It's a no bones day.
We're also receding back into early college white girls because we're drinking, Fireball, which neither of us drank in college, but...
No, I drank it...
I drank it, like, a couple of times.
But it was only when I was with my, high school friends.
Sure. But we're drinking Fireball Hot Toddies.
It's like Christmas,
in a cup. Perfect happiness. But that warmth and happiness is going to distract us from the desolate murder. And of course, our special guest, Scarlett, is here. Say hello to the people.
Oh, just sit on the phone, baby. That's fine. This is not a murder this week.
Is this a survivor story?
Yes, it is a survivor story. It's a lot like, so... What I'm thinking about doing, and we've talked about this off air, is I'm going to tell another story that has to do with someone being kidnapped.
I keep forgetting about your tattoo. Elizabeth got tattooed on Friday, and this is the first time we've seen each other since she got tattooed.
Yeah, I got tattooed on Friday with my grandmother, who is 77 years young.
And getting her second tattoo.
And she got her second tattoo. I love my grandma so much.
I know, I do too.
But yeah, and it's annoying because the wrap's starting to get itchy. But no, this story is similar to the Colleen Stan case. And then I think for
the woman under the bed?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So I think our... It's not... It doesn't last 7 years, let's put it that way. We'll talk about it. But I think what we'll do for our, like, special 5-0 episode...
Oh, you want to compare them?
Well, that, and let's talk about Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, that works.
I think that'd be a cool lens to talk about that. Because it's different. It's different in both.
Okay, so you told me that there's a dude in this case named Brian.
Yes.
Is that the kidnapper or kidnappee?
We'll talk about it.
Well, I'm trying to fill space while you drink your delicious hot toddy.
Oh my God,
with
it's
a
so good. I don't know what...
Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. Fireball, if you want to sponsor us.
Did you... You did something different to it this time, though.
Add a little bit of ginger.
That's what I really like.
So
it.
It's
really good.
It's a great low-calorie drink because it's hot water.
I don't give a shit. It's delicious.
A little bit of honey. Lemon, the juice of one whole lemon.
Mm-hmm.
A cinnamon stick. And a little bit of ginger and then Fireball on top.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. Okay. So
there's more on the stove.
Oh, thank goodness. Your cat is just vibing out right now. Scarlett loves when we're both home. And we haven't been both home since Thursday. And it's Sunday.
Did you leave Thursday night?
I left Thursday.
You left Thursday. So we haven't been home for a full night since Wednesday.
Yeah. And so Scarlett really likes when we're both home and she likes to sit between us.
Yeah. Because on Thursday, somebody went to the vet and we found out that she has fleas. Yes. But now she's got her flea medicine and she feels so much better. And I'm scratching right between her eyes. Oh. And that's like her favorite spot to get pet.
Oh, I love that cat. Yeah. Anyway, so this is the case of Elizabeth Smart. I know, I was typing my notes.
Did you write Elizabeth Gay?
No, I kept writing Elizabeth, and I was like, it's really weird to write my name this many times. Like, I'm not in the story.
Elizabeth Smart or Elizabeth Gay?
Yeah, so this is Elizabeth Smart.
Oh, have I told you I keep on sending Daniel TikToks? There's, like, one, you know the Bo Burnham, the healing the world with comedy.
Yes.
Making a literal change,
metaphorically speaking.
I saw somebody post a TikTok that was like, this is peak comedy, right? It's a standard issued white man being like, every time my wife reminds me that she's bi, I just go, gay.
Oh yeah, you sent that to me.
I sent that to Dan and he was like, man, I gotta step up my game.
Come on, Spikifer. All right, so the sources for this episode are Biography documentary, or Biography, they had a documentary that I watched that was amazing, and it was part of the reason we actually pushed back recording, because I was like, hey, I need to watch this entire thing, because I'm super into it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, her two uncles in this case are just, like, the sweetest human beings in the world who are clearly, like... love her very much, and like,
aww.
One of them was like super weepy the whole time, and I just like
was that who hug. Found her?
No,
just my flashlight.
Wait, what's up with?
I think she's got a little bit of earwax. I can't tell if it's a scab or earwax.
Cats make earwax. I mean, that would make sense, but I've never thought about it before.
Can you see that?
Yeah, that does look like earwax.
Huh. But it also looks a little bloody.
Oh, she didn't like that. All right, anyway.
Keep going.
You don't need to listen to us check our cat's ears. I also listened to a Crime Junkie podcast, which was great for getting just, like, the gist of the story. And then I also used Biography Timeline to kind of help me with the dates and stuff. So, we are in Utah, outside of Salt Lake City. And it is June 4th, 2002.
Cool.
So, kind of recent. Well, I guess not really anymore.
I was almost four. You weren't even three yet.
Marissa, it was almost 20 years ago.
Yeah. It'll be 20 years ago this summer.
Yeah.
We're old. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers to being 84.
Yeah, with my knees right now, I feel 84.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I know.
So this is June 4th. Her family had just attended the funeral of her grandfather. He just passed away.
No.
This was her mother's father. And it was on that same day, I think it was before the funeral, in like the rush and tizzy of trying to get them and all six, the parents and all six of the kids ready to go. Mom had actually burnt the potatoes that she was making for breakfast, I guess. And there was a really, really bad smell in the house. So they actually did something they never did, which was leave the window open overnight. Oh. Yes. So we flash forward to about 2 a.m. on June 5th. So Elizabeth shares a room with her sister, Mary Catherine, who's 9. Elizabeth is 14.
Okay.
At some time around 2 a.m., we're not exactly sure what time, she's awoken with a knife pressed to her throat.
Love that for her.
Her sister wakes up but is paralyzed in fear. She's afraid she moves, like, someone, he'll hurt her. The man tells Elizabeth to be quiet or he will kill her and her whole family. What?
That just made me think of the quote from You where Candace is like, fight or flight. And you never know if you're fight or flight until you're in the moment. And I'm fight all the way. And then I realized that we started season 3 of You without Dan. And Dan's coming over to watch season 3 of You with us tonight. And we have to go back and make it look like we haven't watched the first episode.
He'll live. Dan, I hope you never listen to this. We lied! Anyway. So Elizabeth thinks he might have actually killed other members of her family, and she's worried that he'll, like, kill her sister. Yeah. I don't think she didn't want to die, but she was much more concerned with her family.
Oh, yeah, like most people would be in that situation, I feel like.
Yeah. So he tells her to get up and to get her shoes from the closet, and then they walk out of the house. And her sister is terrified. She's not sure if there's other people in the house and if he's actually gone, but she can't really hear. It's a big house. And so she, like, goes to the door and then, like, gets scared and then, like, runs back to her bed. And then she, like, goes to the door again and runs back to her bed. And it's about, eventually, she gets up the courage and goes and tells her parents. And this is about 4 a.m.
Man.
Yeah. So her parents at first don't believe her. They're like, it was probably just it's 4 a.m. You're woken out of a dead sleep. It's your child telling you, like, someone took Elizabeth. And they're like,
it's a nightmare.
You had a nightmare, but she's, like, is very awake. Like, it's not like a sleepy, she's not sleepy, it's very, like, weird.
Did you used to have, like, recurring nightmares about your siblings?
Yeah, all the time.
Mine was always really weird.
Dude, I had a lot of weird dreams the other night, I'll tell you about them later. You were in them, I forget why.
Why is everybody having me in their dreams? You had me in their dreams? Bryn, our best friend, was sponsored on one of our episodes.
Yeah, she was a guest on one of them.
And, it also texted me today and was like, dude, I've been having dreams about you all week, and I feel like you're pissed at me. And I was like, I haven't seen you in 3 months.
I haven't seen you in 3 months. Yeah, no, I had a dream. I forgot what you were doing. I had a lot of her dreams in there. But anyway, her parents don't believe her, and they're like, maybe Elizabeth just, like, went and slept on the couch. Because, like, her sister kicks her in the sleep sometimes, so sometimes they'll wake up and she's sleeping on the couch. And they go into the room to see if, like, oh, maybe she got freaked out. Elizabeth's not in her bedroom. They check the couch. She's not there. They look around, and then they start to realize she's not here. And it's when, I think it was the father, saw the tear in the screen of the window above in the kitchen, that they were like, holy shit.
Somebody snuck through the window.
Someone got in. So they call the police, and then everyone else that they know. So one of the sons says that he woke up because he heard his mom crying. It's like she had never cried before, and it, like, really jarred him awake. The family also makes a point that they called the police first because they get a lot of slack for calling other people as well. But I think in a panic, they were just like, we just need people to come help us.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% can understand that. You call the police first, and then you call your supports and stuff, or whoever she might have gone to or who would have been around.
Yeah. And as we'll talk, like, the media is very supportive of this family, and, like, then they're not, and then they are, and then they're not, and, like, it goes in these weird waves.
Okay.
So, let's talk a little bit about who Elizabeth Smart is. So, she's 14 years old. She plays the harp, and she's just, like, all-American girl, kind of, like, goes to school, has great friends, is really active in her church. She was raised Mormon, and that's a very big part of her and what she believes, and, like, very practices Mormon, like, doesn't drink, very strictly Mormon.
Okay, so very straight edge.
Yeah. So, like, when her grandfather died, it had really shaken her because, like, how could God do that? And so, like, she was going through, like, a little bit of a weird patch with that.
Yeah, so, like, a spiritual revelation.
Yeah. And she was also really into fairy tales and really believed in fairy tales, and she was waiting for her Prince Charming. Before she had been kidnapped, she was actually reading Ella Enchanted to her sister until her throat was really sore.
Okay, one fantastic book.
Fantastic book.
Two, the whole premise of Ella Enchanted is even though she ends up happily ever after in the end, she was her own Prince Charming, and the only way that she got out of her circumstance was by believing in herself and breaking the curse.
Yes, but she's 14.
I know, but...
She's 14. And she was really excited for the summer to start. So once the man took her out of the house, he led her out into the yard. I think it was the backyard. And then around to the front, and there was no fence, so it was just kind of like a street shot. And then they see a car coming down the street, and he pushes her into the bushes to hide her and him.
Okay.
And as the car drives up, she realizes it's a cop car.
Da-da-da!
And he said something like, God, if this is meant to be, don't let them catch us. And the car drove by, and Elizabeth...
Oh, playing on her.
Because we'll talk about him. He's also very religious.
Was it somebody that she knew from church?
No. And Elizabeth remembers thinking, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like,
that's not how
God works. And then he picks her up out of the bushes, and they start running for a while until they hit the hills. And then they're just climbing up these hills for a very long time. And there's, like, the man's in Utah. And so there's, like, these low bushes, but they're, like, really rooty and
scraggy
and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, kind of hard to climb up and down it, and it's like she was looking for an escape the entire time.
There is no escape.
But there's no escape because you can't run for it because they're so scraggly. And he always made sure that he was behind her so that she couldn't double back. At one point, she did turn to him and say, if you're going to rape and kill me, then do it now, because she wanted her family to be able to find her body. And he turned around and gave, like, an awful smile and an awful response and said he's not going to yet. So they continued up the mountain. And then the sun starts to come up. And she's in bright red pajamas. And so they have to start to move faster. And
because she's easily... Yeah.
And so they have to, like, start darting across, like, tops of mountains and stuff. It's at this point that she recognizes him.
I knew it. Is his name Brian?
His name's Brian. Yes, and you know what? I actually included in my notes, like, where, like, how she knew him, and we're gonna save that for later.
Mm-hmm. Are you punishing me?
A little bit. he mentioned that his wife is waiting for them at wherever they're going, and Elizabeth starts to think, okay, maybe they have kids, and that's why this, maybe they can't have kids, or they had a kid.
And so he's kidnapping.
Away. And maybe they just want a child. Like, maybe this is going to be okay.
People usually go by younger children in that circumstance.
Yes. She's 14 and has just been kidnapped in a panic.
Okay. All right. And she doesn't run a true crime paranormal comedy podcast.
No,
I get it.
No, she's not a dumbass at 23 years old. Accurate.
Or a bully at 22.
An accurate one.
Now I'm debating if we should have Dan pick up more Fireball and I'll just make hot toddies all night.
So eventually they get to a campsite.
Okay.
And there's a woman there. And she gives Elizabeth the creepiest motherfucking hug I've ever heard about. And Elizabeth describes it in the documentary as, like, if you can put, like, hey, if you step out of line, I'll fucking kill you, into a hug. And, like, you're never going to be okay from this. It was all in the hug. Like, she was like, it was the worst hug I've ever had.
Oh my god.
And, yeah, it was gross. And then they go inside the tent with her male captor outside.
And the female captor inside?
Inside with Elizabeth. And she tries to bathe Elizabeth. And Elizabeth pleads, like...
Don't touch
me. No. I'm not getting naked. And eventually, after a lot of pleading, and Elizabeth not doing what she says, fine, just put this robe on. And so she does. But she puts it on over her pajamas and then takes her pajamas
off underneath
so she can maintain her modesty. Because she's very
modest
and sheltered and naive, and she just doesn't want... And she's scared. And then the woman yells at her to take her underwear off, and she refuses. And she says, if you don't, I'm going to have them come in here. And so she eventually has to. And then they hold a sort of ceremony.
She going to be a child, like a second wife?
Yeah. So now Elizabeth and her captor are quote-unquote married. It gets worse. It's about this point when she realizes, like, she is definitely going to be raped, and there is absolutely nothing she can do.
Yeah, well, he married her so that in the fucked up eyes of God, he wouldn't be raping her.
Exactly. So, and she pleads with him and tells him, like, this isn't logical, like, I'm 14,
I don't consent to this.
It's not a legally binding marriage, like, it's all, like, all...
Yeah.
Anything she can say. At one point, she actually says, I haven't started my period yet. And, like, that just fucking rocked my soul because she's so fucking young.
Yeah.
And that gave him pause, and he called out to his wife and was like, is it okay if she hasn't her period? And the wife calls back, yeah, it is. And then he rapes her.
Jesus.
And, like, she's obviously shattered from it because, like, that's so fucking awful. And then they let her, she kind of cries herself to sleep. And when she wakes up, he's putting a rope around her ankle, or a chain around her ankle, and they chain her to a tree. So she can only go a certain radius around camp. But she can still be in the tent, which, like, I guess is a little better.
Yeah, I mean, she's got access to food and shelter, so it's not like they're leaving her.
She doesn't have access to food. She has access to a tent.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about it.
Great.
So now we're going to go and step away from that madness and go back to the house. What?
I saw a very funny TikTok earlier that was what your favorite Disney villain in your childhood says about your trauma from your childhood. Mm-hmm. And the first one that came up was Ariel, which, as you know, has been my favorite Disney princess my entire life. Mm-hmm. I used to watch The Little Mermaid VHS so much that it broke at my parents' house. And my parents would, like, rewind it by fingers, and then, like, one day it just snapped in half. And so Ariel was the very first one, and I went, Ariel, this screams me body dysmorphia. And I just, like, cackled and swept my chest, and I was like, I don't want to fucking deal with this today.
We gotta, like, switch our whiteboard downstairs to, like, times the clock app has ruined us.
Yeah.
And, like, the amount of times I see something on there and I'm like, this goddamn app.
This is not what I need right now.
It's like, I just wanted to come on here for videos of animals and you just told me why I'm so broken. It's not good.
It's some no bones day.
It's a no bones day. Happy no bones day, everyone.
Happy no bones day.
So back at the house, the police arrive.
Okay.
And the neighbors arrive. And their friends from church arrive. And everyone's in the fucking crime scene. So it's completely compromised.
Yeah.
And a lot of detectives, like, now, looking back on it, are like, we put on, like, the greenest cops in that kind of shift. And that was such a mistake. And a lot of them are like, for the life of me, I don't know why that crime scene wasn't locked down.
Yeah.
Like, that was so stupid.
That very clearly should have been locked down. There's no reason that crime scene, even with that amount of people, there's absolutely no reason why the bedroom itself wasn't locked down.
Or the window.
Because,
like,
kitchen.
People were touching the counters. And, like, if you climb in through a window, you're going to have to put your hand on the counter.
Yeah, and so they can't use any of those fingerprints?
No. They did find, like, one full handprint above her, like, on her, like...
Wall above her
headboard. Yeah, it was either the headboard or the wall, where, like, it would make sense someone would lean over to, like, threaten a small child. But I don't even know if that even ended up matching her captor. Because it was just completely compromised.
So if she's 14 in 2002, she was born in 88, which means that she's 33 this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably about that. So everyone shows up totally compromised. The only thing that the police really have to go on is the window, which doesn't really tell them anything, and Mary Catherine, because Mary Catherine saw everything. And she described this man with a beard, and not like a ball cap, but like some sort of hat that looked like a ball cap.
He had a snapback on.
No, it wasn't like that. Like, it was like a...
like a hard hat or something?
No, it was like a... I have a picture in my head and I can't come up with it. I'm just making
golf cap, motorcycle helmet.
No, it's kind of like, you know, like the puffy ones, and then it has like a brim.
Oh, like a duck hunter's hat. People wear them when they go hunting in the winter.
I have no idea.
They're usually like some kind of plaid on top. It's supposed to protect your ears.
No, not like that. Not like that at all.
Do you want to Google it and then show me?
No, it was just a hat with a brim. It's not that deep. But she did say that she recognized his voice from somewhere, but she wasn't sure from where.
Okay.
So, I said that. He had the window torn open. And normally the house has an alarm system. And normally they don't always turn it on at night. But, like, normally it'll, like, make a big, like, ding if, like, a window or a door is opened. And they went out the front door. But the reason it didn't go off is because... for whatever reason, and this was totally by chance, a magnet or something had fallen and, like, gotten caught in the door in a weird way.
It's like the Simply Safe.
I know. I was like, we need to keep magnets away from our doors. And it, like, threw off the system, so it didn't work. So it didn't make a sound. And that
That's
totally
terrifying.
Was just totally dumb.
That is actually terrifying.
Isn't that horrifying? I listened to that, and I was like, oh, I don't like that. So the family is then taken to the police station, and they're separated, and they're each questioned. And the mom was talking about this in the documentary, and her poor face, because she has five other children that she needs to take care of and comfort, and, like, they're all separated from her. And Mary Catherine's in her own room, and she has, I think, the rest are boys. And
that's
all in
absolutely
different rooms,
horrifying.
And I, like, can't, I mean, that'd be fucking awful. So the police thought, okay, maybe something happened, and they're covering up that she died because it's one, they're afraid, like, one of their kids is at fault or something. Yeah, which happens. Or
yeah. And I know it happens, but still, that's,
yeah,
for that to be the first thing that they go to.
Well, they were like, okay, well, maybe, because it was pretty clear that, like, they didn't think any of the family members abducted her.
Okay.
In the immediate house. So they were like, what's the next theory? Is that someone they know abducted her, but they can't really question them about that. So it was, okay, maybe something happened in the house and this was to cover up a murder. Because the circumstances can be totally suspicious as, like, well, why'd they invite everyone over to contaminate the crime scene?
Yeah, I don't know. That still, to me, screams that, like, unless there had been some kind of prior suspicion of the family for an unrelated case... I don't know why they would go straight for that, because I look at the details of that case and I see grieving family.
Yeah, trying whatever they can. Like, you have to check all the boxes, and, like, I mean, do you know the case of JonBenet Ramsey?
I also took Abby Baird's developmental psychology seminar.
We didn't cover that case in the
class.
Yeah,
we did.
I don't think so. Oh. Okay, really, what's the case?
JonBenet Ramsey, the little girl who was killed by her brother?
Wasn't killed by her brother.
Her mom?
Well, they think he was killed by her brother, but they're not sure.
Because we compared it to Paris Bennett.
We did?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that case. Yeah, I don't have that in my notes. Good job, you know your crime.
I am a psychology major.
No, you mean shit. But yeah, so, like, that case, like, this police didn't suspect it immediately, and then they were like, oh, this might have been what happened.
Yeah.
So it does, like, it does possibly happen, because I'm not sure how I feel about that case.
Yeah, well, I remember the JonBenet Ramsey case because you and I think both of us feel about the fact.
Well, I wrote a paper about it. I wrote a paper about it when I was in Stockholm that I probably made you read.
Yeah, but I very distinctly remember discussing it senior year, so we probably did both.
Yeah. But anyway, so eventually the family realized that there was, like, this really was an abduction, or excuse me, the police realized this really was an abduction, and so they... let the family go home. And Louise remembers trying to stay strong for the kids, like, during the day, and then, like,
absolutely falling apart
night.
At night.
Yes. And the suspects were limited because Elizabeth's circle was pretty small. The police actually thought this was going to be a pretty easy case because she didn't really...
have many friends or like, a lot of interactions.
She wasn't doing bad things. Like, she wasn't, like, going out and partying where she could have, like, met a boy and then they abducted her or something weird like that. Or, like, was it into drugs and the drug dealer abducted her or something weird like that. Like, it was a pretty, like, we don't really know what happened here. Because, mm-hmm. like, no one was really a good suspect for a while. So they tried to, they went after the family, they questioned all the uncles. And, like, her dad, like, ended up having a nervous breakdown about day 3 after she went missing. Because he was the one handling the media while the mom handled, like, having
the family.
5 kids. And he eventually, like...
just had a breakdown.
He had a breakdown and had to be hospitalized.
Aw, man.
I know. And the uncles were suspects. And they actually ended up having to get polygraphed. Just to, like, cross some I's and dot some T's. And both of the uncles came back as, like, either... they were lying or it was inconclusive. And the police actually, one of the investigators was on the documentary and he was like, that happens a lot with families because they feel guilty that they didn't do more. It's not because they're doing it. And I mean, was like, interesting. Never thought about that.
And you and I also have somewhat different views on polygraphs. My opinion is that if it's not admissible in court, it shouldn't be.
It's a tool. It can help point things in the right direction. That's where I stand on it.
I just don't agree.
And for a while, the media, after the initial shock of the case hit the media, and there wasn't a ton of movement, all of a sudden the media started reporting that the screen was cut from the inside. So the media kind of turned on the family.
How can you tell?
I have no fucking idea. So, meanwhile, there are searchers everywhere.
Yeah.
And it brought the family to tears how many people came out to search. And one of the uncles who was, like, really running the searches were, like, it wasn't just, like, one kind of searcher. It was
everyone
came out to look for Elizabeth. Elizabeth, while she was with them, this is, like, day 3 or 4, by the way. This is still, like, her first week of being kidnapped. She actually thought she heard someone calling to her. She actually thought it was one of her uncles when she was with them. And then it went away. And she remembers also huddling in the tent when there was a helicopter swooshing around above them, and she was, like, ready for, like, the SWAT team to jump out in, like, all their gear and, like, save her, and eventually the helicopter flew away. And the investigation continued. Without really a ton of leads, because their family pretty much checked out.
Yeah.
So, as we discussed, Elizabeth's Mormon, and her captor knew that. And so he starts to use it against her to make her feel bad.
Well, the captor was also Mormon, right?
No. So he is just, I think he was a born-again Christian.
Okay, so he was a radicalist.
Yeah, he was a born-again Christian. We'll talk about it later, but I think it's important to mention now. He actually was like, there are a lot of murderers who I'm like, or like kidnappers where I'm like, you're, like, interesting, and I don't like you, but you're interesting. This guy's just such a fucking dickbag. I, like, cannot stand him for some reason.
God, can't stand men named Brian.
Well, like, just to the point where I'm like, I don't care how you did what you did, because you're just such a dick, and I hate you so much. Like, at least with Cameron, who kidnapped Colleen Stan, like, that, I think, is actually, like, he's interesting. I think he is interesting.
You don't think he's a dick?
He's a dick. He's also a bag of dicks, but I think he's interesting. This guy, I just think he's a bag of dicks. I don't know why. I can't explain
myself. What
about
his wife?
She's also a bag of dicks.
Okay.
She's a bag of dicks and a half.
Okay.
We'll talk about her.
Okay.
So, Elizabeth's Mormon, and they started to use that against her. They forced her to drink alcohol. And that's a huge
no-no. Oh, huge no-no in the Mormon church.
And she, like, would pretend to take sips, and he would yell at her, and so she would have to. She was afraid of the consequences. He also never shut the fuck up, ever. So, he was a traveling preacher, is what he says. He's, like, claimed to be, like, a missionary, like, sent from God. And... So he never shut up about his religious mumbo-jumbo, and I fucking hate him so much. I really couldn't tell you why I just fucking hate him so much. So, the police...
Maybe you knew him in a previous life.
Maybe, and I just fucking hate him. I don't know why. I cannot stand this motherfucker. I have no rationale for it whatsoever. Because I normally think, like, people like this are, like, really interesting. Like, they're still a bag of dicks, and they're really interesting. He can go fuck himself.
You hear that, Brian? You're an asshole and you can go fuck yourself.
Exactly. So the police start to expand their circle of who they're going to look at because they've, like, cleared everyone else. So they expand it to about a year before their kidnapping. The family had actually been doing work on the house. So they start to look at literally everyone that came in and did work on the house.
Oh my God.
Because they were like, we have no other leads. And because they also were like, this guy went right to her room. Mm-hmm. He didn't open other doors. He didn't stumble into her brother's rooms. He went right to her room. So they were
so
like,
he had to know where she was.
They probably know the layout of the house, which is also part of the reason they focused on the family for so long.
Yeah.
And so they expanded it and they landed on Richard Reese. He had a record. He had shot at cops during a pharmacy robbery and had nearly killed them. He had an alibi for the night, but it was that his wife said he was home, so it wasn't the strongest alibi.
Yeah.
And he did start to lie about easy things, so they kind of jumped to conclusions that this is our guy.
Yeah.
And Mary Catherine was like, that's not him. Like, that's clearly, like, that's not who I saw break into the room. But eyewitness testimony is not super
reliable in the dead of
and
night.
And she's 9 years old, and, like, I think there were a lot of reasons they didn't believe her. But in this case, unlike most, they actually should have. Because they, it's not him. And we'll talk about what they did to him. But I already jumped back to Elizabeth's case.
Do you want to take a break and top off our drinks? Or do you have a natural stopping point?
I have
soon?
A stop later.
Okay, great.
So, while they're looking into Reese, Elizabeth is still with these assets. And she could not talk about her life prior to her kidnapping.
Okay.
And he also starts talking about abducting other girls.
Okay.
And making Elizabeth one of 7 wives.
It's weird that he's purely a born-again Christian because the 7 wives thing is a very, like, a Mormon.
I know, it's a little, thing. Yeah. I think...
Like a radical Mormon thing.
I think it was more of, like, slave wives.
Okay.
His wife, I forget what he calls her, and she calls him Emmanuel, and he calls her something with
Sarah or Rebecca.
No,
or
it starts with an H, like
Heather?
No. It's something really old religious and stupid sounding.
Let me look.
Can you tell I can't give these two the time of day?
Old religious.
It starts with like an H.
Names.
It's not Hephzibah.
Hecuba? One.
No.
Hannah?
No.
Hadara?
No.
Hadassah?
No.
Hattie?
No.
Hadley?
No.
Haley? Hagar?
Not Hagar. Oh, maybe it was Hephzibah.
Hallie, Haley, 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 Holly, Haley, Halsey?
No.
Haminissa? Hamsina?
No.
Hannah, Hannah. Hanisha?
No.
Hanma?
No. What the fuck is her name?
Harani? Haritha?
No.
Harleen? Harley? No. Harleanne? Harmony? Harper? Harriet? Hattie? Hava? Haven? Hailey? Haley? So many ways to spell Haley. Hazel? Heaven? Heavenly? Heba?
No. I think it might have been Hephzibah.
Hedva? Hedya? Helene? Helena, Hamalitha, Henrietta, Hephzibah. My delight is in she.
No, hang on, I'm Googling it because now I want to know. I should have written it down because I was like, I really hate it. I was like, I'm not going to say it because I just fucking hate it. What did he call her? No, I don't want an ad. Thank you very much. What the fuck did they call her? Not well. It's not that important. He calls her some stupid religious name, and I hate it so much. Anyway, alright, back to the story. So,
but anyway.
So, at one point, he's talking about where his mother lives. This is just, like, a random conversation they're having. And Elizabeth was like, oh, that's where my cousin lives. And he was like, oh, is it? And she, I think, mentions that she's also her age. So he decides to kidnap her. Yeah. Well, he tried to. So he actually got not the wrong room. They actually recently switched rooms. Mm. And there was a girl sleeping in there, but it was the 19-year-old sister. And he actually ended up knocking the pictures frames off the sill and woke up the oldest sister, who screamed. This was actually the first night that one of the siblings hadn't slept in their parents' room, because since the kidnapping of Elizabeth, they had all been sleeping on the floor of their parents' room. And the 19-year-old was finally like,
I'm gonna go sleep in my own bed.
And so that was the first night that happened.
Yeah, that girl is never sleeping anywhere but the floor of her parents'
room. Seriously. So, and this freaked everybody out, because they were like,
of course.
The family took it as, oh my gosh, Elizabeth must still be alive, because how else would they have done
known,
that?
No, yeah.
Because it was done he had propped up a chair next to the house and had cut the screen in the exact same way that it had been done at her house.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, okay, this has to be the same guy. But the police thought, this is just a copycat.
Copycat killer.
And they know that this is her family lives here, and it's either like a copycat.
Or somebody trying to scare them.
Or some kids messing around trying to scare them. So Elizabeth is tied to that tree for 6 weeks. And in this time, she was starved and kept from water. So he would go into town to like get supplies. And really what he would call that is he'd be going on missions, because he'd be preaching and trying to convert people. I can't stand it. But she was happy when he'd go into town, because it meant she wasn't going to get raped for 12 hours until he came back. And eventually the couple starts fighting, because the women are never allowed to leave, and the woman is sick of it, and she doesn't want to just stay in a stupid mountain with this stupid woman, this stupid girl that they kidnapped. So they ended up, all three of them, going into town one day.
Jezebel, why?
When they were in town, the women would have to wear robes and head coverings, so that they were, like, completely covered and you couldn't tell their identity.
So, like, a sicca? Is the sicca the full-length one?
I don't know. That's why I didn't say it.
I think it is. I had a friend who wore a hijab for a little while, but I haven't known anybody who's worn.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they wore, but it wasn't. I think normally you see them black. This was like white robes, right. But they're completely covered. And they actually ended up going to a party. Did you think this was where the story was going? They end up going to this weird counterculture party.
What?
And Elizabeth had never been to one before. She'd never been to a party before.
She's 14!
She'd never been to a party before, and there's like weird fire dancers and people getting drunk and like
super weird. It's a counterculture party?
Yeah, well, so like in Utah, if you're either Mormon or you're not, and all the people that aren't are part of this like crazy counterculture to go combat like how ridiculous
the Mormon church
and how strict everything is. So they went to this party, and they actually had someone in the documentary who met Elizabeth at that party.
Oh, no way.
And he, like, was just, like, he told her, like, you should get away from, like, that guy. Like, he's a creep. Even though he was telling everyone that was his daughter. And, like, he wishes he had done more that night. And he, like, cried on the documentary and was like, Elizabeth, if you see this, I'm so sorry.
Aw, buddy.
The next day, they actually went to a library because they needed to find a place to stay for winter, because it was going to get cold where they were.
Okay.
And they were approached by a homicide detective. I'll tell you what happens after the break. And the bangs girl's butt. And we're back.
Okay. So you got 4 pages left, and then somebody needs a nap, and that somebody's name shares the same name with the main character of the story.
Elizabeth?
And also me.
I already took a nap.
Yeah.
Scarlett and I took a very nice couch nap
today. Dude, I'm so ready to nap, but I have to clean the kitchen after this.
I have to clean the floors. Anyway, so the homicide detective approaches them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, can I, like, hi, I'm a homicide detective. Can I please, like, there's a girl missing. Is that her? Can I see her face? And
of course, Brian's going to be like, no! It's against her religious freedom. And he's like, oh, can I ask her? And Brian's going to be like, no, that's also against her religious freedom.
That's exactly what happened.
Yes!
That was exactly what happened, because he was like, no, and you can't speak to her, and she can't speak to you, and the only people that are going to see her face and her hair
are me and her husband.
Or any man, the only men that are going to see her hair are me and her husband. And I'm just, the fuck off. And this is like post 9/11. So it's like,
this is like newly post 9/11 too. This is less than a year.
It's a year.
Are we still in June?
No, I forget when this took place actually. This is 6 weeks after. It's about a year.
This is August.
Yeah. So this is like, yeah, because he shaved his beard after 9/11 because he, like...
Did he look Middle Eastern?
No, but I think he looked enough... They're in Utah. He looked enough like one night.
He was not stark white. He was not... With blonde hair.
Screaming white. So they shaved after 9/11. Anyway, I hate him. But eventually the officer had to give up because, like, what is he gonna... He can't force her. He can't... And it's religious freedom. And, like, at some point, like, you can't push any further, and so he walked away.
Yeah, that bothers me.
It was at this point that they left for San Diego because they were so worried that, like, that was a close call.
Where's Carmen San Diego?
And they also needed to find a good place for winter, and it took 2 to 3 weeks for the captor to get the money he needed from ministering. And then my next note says, from being an annoying street preacher.
So he was begging.
Past Elizabeth also hated him, yes. So at this point, Richard is still in the hot seat. He has been arrested on a parole violation, so they can keep an eye on him. He is in custody when Brian tried to break into her cousin's house, and that's mostly why they chalked it up to it being kids. Because
they're like, oh, we've got the guy, this isn't...
We need to make this fit our theory. And the police really just honed in on him, and that was the end all be all, and they never really gave up on it. And, like, some of the investigators in the documentary were like, we all kind of didn't think it was him, but the key people leading the investigation
were like, this is him.
And we couldn't, there was only so much we could do.
Yeah.
So, he was arrested on a parole violation because he had stolen, like, jewelry from, the Smarts that were a couple $1,000, and that was a parole violation. And then they pretty much tortured him in prison. So, he was kept in a cell for 23 hours a day.
Ah, solitary confinement.
The last hour he had a hood on his face, on his head, so he could walk around the prison. Isn't that so fun? They also, like, restricted meals from him, and they also did not allow him any visitations rights with his wife and his son. Which is pretty much torture.
And
he never caved. They put him in hours of interrogation, and he never was like...
He was like, dude, I stole some watches. This can't be that deep.
And he never said he did. Which, honestly, I'm like, kudos.
I'm impressed.
Kudos to him, because, like, I think I would have broken, because I, just to make it stop.
They put me in solitary confinement for one day. I would have told them that I killed JFK. Like,
yeah, like, just anything to get out of that situation. But it's kind of coming, I'm not sure if it's the end, there's no strong leads. Mm-hmm. There's just no strong leads besides him, so the police just double down on him.
Have you ever thought about, like, what kind of person you would be if you went to prison?
No.
Because, like, I've always hoped that if I get arrested and sent to prison for a couple of months, that I'd be the type of person to come out of it, like, super fucking buff. Like, that I'd be General Iroh and doing pull-ups from my singular window in the ceiling. But then quarantine taught me that even when I've got, like, unlimited resources and time on my hands, that I'm still not gonna get super buff.
Yep, that's pretty much what quarantine taught me.
Yeah, but I'll also in prison they just monitor your food, so it's not like I can get super lethargic.
I mean, yeah, but it's not exactly like good nutritious food for you either.
That's true.
So anyway, it's 12 weeks after her abduction, and Richard Reese has a brain aneurysm and goes into a coma, and a couple of days later they pull the plug. So he dies.
Ouch.
And the investigation is like, well, what do we do now? Because that was our guy.
That was our guy. He never confessed. We refused to let him see his wife and his son, and then he died.
And then he died. Which, like, he wasn't a great, like, he's not a saint, but, like, I'm so sorry, dude. That sucks. That's not good. That's an awful way to go.
I don't care who you are. Like,
you can be Brian. You can be this asshat. I fucking hate this man.
So if you had Brian's plane, Brian's brain.
Oh my goodness, you scared me.
She just jumped up onto the people.
You scared me, babies.
If you had Brian's brain on a platter, would you be curious at looking at it?
I mean, I'm curious looking at any brains, but like...
But like, you've told me for years that one of the reasons that you want to do what you want to do is that you want to look into the brains and the minds of people who exhibit psychopathic behavior, understand what makes them tick.
Yeah.
If you had the ability to talk to Brian and then dissect his brain after he died, would you do it? Or would you just be like, you're not worth my time?
I probably would, but I would...
You'd hate it.
That would be... and be a test of me biting my tongue. And not just being like, you're just the fucking worst, man. Like, why the fuck do you exist? Like, I don't know why. I really don't know why. I just fucking hate this guy. There was a lot of worry from the family and from the police department that this investigation was gonna die with him.
Okay.
Because they didn't have anyone else, and the police didn't really give a shit to try to find anyone else. And by this time, Elizabeth's off in San Diego. So it's not like someone's going to run into her and know who she is.
Yeah. This didn't make national news?
It made national news, but it was mostly focused in Utah. And, like, it didn't make sense. Like, people in San Diego weren't as like, invested. Mostly kept her in, like, this weird, like, gross, swampy kind of weird. And she was, like, very much alone.
There's a comedy bit that's like, forgive me for all the sins that I have, and like ignoring all the Amber Alerts that pop up.
Oh my god, that's true though. I at least try to, I read them.
I try
to. I read them, but I don't.
I only get them like half the time.
That's weird. They're still forcing her to drink alcohol, but at this point it's not really forcing. She's kind of willingly doing it because it does numb everything that's going on.
Oh yeah, I mean.
Which like, honey girl, yes, and drink it. Like you're in the worst situation ever. And she also kind of just stops fighting when he forces himself on her.
Yeah.
And she's, this is nothing she can do. And now we're 4 months into her abduction. And Mary fucking Catherine remembers who it was.
No.
Yes. She's 9 years old. She remembers who it was.
So what was that? What was that like? Does she just like wake up one day and be like, oh my God, I can put the pieces together?
She was reading the Guinness Book of World Records and just remembered it. Just totally random.
I'm curious about like if that's ever going to happen to me with my... So I have retrograde amnesia from my motorcycle accident.
Yeah.
I'm very curious if I'm just, like, gonna wake up out of a dead sleep one day and remember the face of the woman who helped me off the side of the road.
I doubt it, because, like, it's not like she had amnesia. It's just she couldn't place where she knew the voice from.
Yeah, yeah.
And she knew the voice because he had worked on their house for literally one day.
One day?
Over a year ago, before she was kidnapped. So...
Why only one day?
We'll talk about it. So... All the kids and mom were going to the mall to get clothes.
Okay.
And they split up, so the boys went in one section, and she was like, go pick what you want, I'll come over and buy it whenever we're done here. And the boys come back, and they're like, hey, like, there's this, like, homeless guy asking for work. Like, do you think we can give him work? They were trying to be good people.
Good Christians.
And she walked over, and she talks to him, and he's like, yeah, my name's Emmanuel. I'm a street preacher. And... I'm looking for work. Can you give me work? And she's like, yeah, if you call my husband, he'll probably set you up with work. And he went over, and he worked on the roof, and he took a tree down with some of the boys. He worked with the family. He worked with, like...
For, like, a singular day.
For a singular day. And he was supposed to come back the next day, and he never did. And he knew he was going to kidnap Elizabeth.
God.
And he had been planning it for a year, and he had been stalking the house.
A lot of the times when we talk about these cases, especially in survivor cases, I try to think of what my family would be like in that situation if that happened to me.
That's how this blows the case wide open.
Oh yeah, clearly.
But the police told the family, like, don't say anything, go to the media yet. But yeah, so because they're afraid that it's gonna scare him away and he's gonna go underground, but they're also
He did in San Diego.
Well, they don't know he's in San Diego because he's a homeless person.
They're afraid of him doing that.
Yeah, they're afraid of him leaving or going underground, but they're also, like, don't know where to find him. So there's not really a good answer as to what the fuck to do. So the media is not involved yet, and they, like, had this possible suspect that they just had to keep quiet. But they actually don't really know his real name, because Emmanuel's not his real name.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are leading the investigation still believe it's Reese. It's Richard Reese, so they're not really...
Who's dead?
Who's dead, and has no hard evidence against. And then John Walsh steps in. And if you're a true crime person, you know who the fuck I'm talking about. He's the host of America's Most Wanted. He had his son abducted and murdered. And then he became a huge victim, like, rights advocate, and then ended up hosting this show.
Okay.
He's a gem. And he meets with the family for the show, and they tell him what's going on. And they're not sure if they should go public with it, or if they should just
accept... Is this while he's running America's Most Wanted?
Yes. Or if they should just accept that, like, it was Richard Reese and close the case. And he told the family, like, if you think at all that she's still out there, you need to
keep
pushing. Because Luis was like, this is hurting my family.
Yeah, of course.
Should we just close it and move on? And he's like, if you think there's any chance she's out there,
keep
like,
going.
You have to keep pushing. And they actually tell him, like, here's the update. Like, here's what we have. And he broke the news on the show. And this is about 6.5 months after her abduction. So by February, the family has decided to do all the press they can to get this information out about him.
Oh, yeah.
And the police are fucking pissed about it. They tell everyone he's a born-again Christian, going from homeless shelter to shelter, preaching about God. They have a composite sketch done by the dad's memory of what he looked like. And they spread it everywhere. And the police are pissed. But within 2 weeks, they have a lead. I know. So Emmanuel's sister calls in and is like, hey, I think that's my brother. Her brother's name is Brian David Mitchell. He's divorced. And he is now with some batshit crazy woman called Wanda Barzi. I couldn't find a ton on both of their previous, what they did, but Wanda apparently has, like, 6 grown children from a previous marriage.
They were like, where is mom?
She's fucking insane. They both have charges of, like, petty crimes, especially Brian. He's been caught shoplifting a lot, because he's a homeless man, and he steals a lot. He was actually arrested when Elizabeth was kidnapped. He was arrested for shoplifting in February, before it had really gone out.
February in 2005?
2003.
Oh, right,
we're
right,
2002.
Right. Sorry, I thought we were in 2004 for a second.
No. And at this time, they're in San Diego, and Elizabeth and Wanda are left on top of this mountain with no supplies, and he disappears for days. And Elizabeth's like, I almost died of dehydration. Like, she couldn't stand up, she couldn't really move. And thankfully, it started to rain.
Yeah.
And that's how they were okay. And so when America's Most Wanted aired, this whole case blew up. And that's how they found her.
Well, okay, so elaborate. You can't just say America's Most Wanted blew it up and then that's how they found her. Like, who found her?
Oh, no, we'll get into that. Because they also get to know more about information about Brian. So his ex-wife actually calls America's Most Wanted their hotline and tells them that he's a street preacher, he goes by Emmanuel, and he had molested her daughter for years, which much more fits a profile of someone that would do this than some guy who shot at police during a pharmacy robbery. Just saying.
Yeah.
And everyone comes forward like, yeah, he totally
he's
is
a creep.
Capable.
This is
totally he's
totally him.
Capable of doing this. But she does say he's not a murderer. Like,
she's alive.
His ex-wife is like, if he took her, she's still out there.
Yeah.
And a report comes in from a restaurant where people saw him, and he was here with two women, with two other people. And the family was like, oh my gosh, she's still alive.
Good.
At this point, it's been nearly 9 months. And her captors and her are getting ready to move again.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth, who is a fucking amazing human being. Badass. She's, like, also one of, like, I have to show you some of the documentary. She's awesome. She's just, like, she's fantastic. And she's doing fantastic now, by the way.
Good.
They're getting ready to move again for a new place for the summer. And Elizabeth wants to go back to Salt Lake City. And she figures out how. Because she doesn't know if she can, like, get back to her family, but she just wants to be near her family.
Mm-hmm.
And she figures out how. She thought about how he had manipulated people and how he was able to get that detective to walk away from them. And so that's exactly what she did to him. So she totally played to his ego and told him that she had a feeling that they should go back to Salt Lake. But she knew God would never speak to her, but God would speak to him because he's the prophet. So, like, what do you think? Like, do you think, like, God wants us to go back to Salt Lake? And he said, yeah. And it fucking worked. And so they... And part of her reasoning was, like, I think it would be a good life experience for us to hitchhike. Because a part of, like, what he'd been telling her with, like, raping her and stuff was, like...
It was a life experience?
Yeah, this is what husband and wife do. This isn't, like... Or drinking alcohol, it's an important life experience. And so she used that against him.
Oh, my God.
That it was important for her to hitchhike. And they hitchhiked back. And they put Elizabeth in, like, a dollar store, like, gray wig and sunglasses. They ended up having to walk for miles by March 12th. They made it
back to Salt Lake.
This was also the day that the lead story in the newspaper was how pissed the family was with the police
for keeping
the information back. So her face was everywhere. And that they ran the story and they said, we're looking for Brian David Mitchell. We have questions for him. And that was the exact same day they arrived back in the city. And immediately people started noticing them. Because even though they weren't in these weird robes anymore, like, she was in jeans and a t-shirt.
She was still in a dollar store wig and sunglasses.
Yeah, and it was a gray wig, and just clearly a young girl. And they were swarmed by police within hours of them getting back into Salt Lake.
Amazing.
And Brian gave a fake name and said that they had given up all their earthly possessions because they were messengers of Jesus Christ. And so they couldn't identify themselves, but this was his daughter and his wife. I fucking hate this man. But the police officers realized how nervous this girl was. Like, the officer said, we could see her heart beating in her chest.
Help me. We should learn how to say help me in Morse code.
We need to learn sign language.
Dan knows sign language. He and I were talking about it this morning.
We should do that. So, the officers decide, this isn't right. And they probably kind of break the law a little bit. Because if this was actually his daughter, it's not really legal for her to be questioned without
him.
But they pull her aside
and they're like, hey, dude.
We need you to tell us who you are. And she gave them whatever garbage Brian told her. I think he told her, like, you have to tell them that you're my stepdaughter and you grew up in Florida. Which also, like, super fucking creepy because, like, he molested a stepdaughter. And, like, you grew up in Florida, and now you're living out here with me, or something like that, and you can't take off your sunglasses because you just had eye surgery and stuff like that. And the police don't buy it. They're like, here's this young girl with a gray wig. It's clearly a wig, and it's gray, with sunglasses that she's not supposed to take off. Like, something's not adding up. And so they eventually pull off a missing, like, person's form and hold it next to her and was like, this is you. Can you just say it's you? Like, this is clearly you.
Yeah, we know this is you.
We know this is you. And she denied being Elizabeth Smart for 45 minutes.
I don't know why, as soon as they didn't pull her aside, she was like, hey, look, I'm Elizabeth Smart. Get me the fuck away from this man.
Because she was terrified that he was going to... Because everything that he had, like... And she gets criticized a lot for that, and she talks about it. Because she's like, everything that he had been telling me, my only source of information for 9 months is that... He can get away with all of this shit.
Yeah.
He was arrested and was let out because he told everyone that he was going to do better for shoplifting when he had already kidnapped her and that she was being held hostage. For months.
God, I hate men.
And so it was Wanda. Wanda was feeding her the same bullshit. Wanda is still very culpable in this to me. And eventually, after 45 minutes, they said... Like, look, we're going to handcuff you and take you down to the station. Like, this is ridiculous. So they handcuff everybody. And they're like, look, this is the last time we're going to ask you. Like, are you Elizabeth Smart? And she says, thou sayest. And so apparently, because that's how they had been talking the entire time they've been up these fucking mountains, like fucking weirdos. Because
I'm calling BS.
No, that's what she said. because she was hoping that if Brian was in earshot and could hear her say that, that she was hoping he would think that she was, like, doing what he wanted so that he wouldn't go kill her family.
I guess.
Because he'd already broken into the house.
Yeah, he knew where they lived. Did the Smarts move?
No, they stayed in the same house. Thou sayeth. And then they were like, well, it's not a no. So they took it as she's Elizabeth Smart. And because, yeah, I said that. So they were handcuffed and taken into the police station in different cars, and they were placed in separate rooms. And once they got there, immediately Elizabeth told them everything.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And, like, this is what happened. I never want to see them again. Like, you have to make sure they never go to what I'm afraid they're going to kill my family. And she was there, and they called the family. And she said when she saw her dad, she finally felt like, because she didn't really jump up and say hello to him. She's just kind of sitting on the couch, like, very meager. And he kind of came down and sat next to her, and he's like, is that you? And she said, yeah. And once, like, once she got a hug from her dad, that's when she finally felt safe and began to cry.
Elizabeth.
Wanda is fugly. I mean, that's true. I don't know why that note's there. Oh, because they put up, in their documentary, they put up their mugshots.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda is so fugly. I can't even tell you.
I have to look her up. What's the last name?
Wanda Barzee. While you're doing that, so Elizabeth's reunited with her family, and John...
95 Christian girl names. Wanda Barzee.
Wanda Barzee.
She pops right up. She's an old lady.
Brian's not much better, but Wanda is fucking ugly. I'm sorry.
This is her and Brian, right?
No.
Is that her first husband?
I think that's her... Yeah, that's her first husband.
Man.
Did you see her arrest photo?
No, I didn't.
That's his ending.
Also, I've got a dinner question for you when we finish the podcast.
Okay.
Well, I'll make time while you're scrolling through the photos. Ooh, my God. Is a horrible photo.
She's fucking ugly. So anyway, Elizabeth is reunited with her family.
And that's Mitchell?
Brian David Mitchell. Yeah, isn't he a good looker? Isn't he a looker? John Walsh is on the documentary, and he tearily says, like, we finally got one back.
Good.
Which I just, like, broke my heart because his son was murdered.
Oh, yeah.
Her Uncle David...
Keep Summer safe.
Her Uncle David... So she had the two... It's her dad's Ed, and then it's Uncle David, and then Uncle Sam, I think. And Sam's the one that actually ends up writing a book about this.
Oh, wow.
And her Uncle David is the one who is so teary the whole documentary, and he said he was just so overjoyed when he got a hug from her.
Aww.
This is the cutest family. And Elizabeth rarely let go of her sister that whole day.
Of course.
Yeah. At the end of the day, she told her family, like, all right, I'm going to go to bed in my bedroom. Good night. And they were like,
no.
Do you want to have, like, a big family sleepover in the master bedroom? And she's like, no, I want to go sleep in my own room. And don't worry, I'll be here in the morning. How badass is this girl?
Oh, my God. For a 15-year-old, that's pretty slick.
She's the best. It took 8 years for this to go to trial. 8 years.
That doesn't surprise me.
It shouldn't take that long. It should be a
speedy trial. No, it shouldn't. It doesn't surprise me, but it's like...
Yeah, it's because they had to hold so many competency hearings because Brian seemed delusional because he was an asshole with religious bullshit. And he's totally competent. He totally knew what he was doing was wrong. He's just a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote, he is so annoying.
Good job.
I don't even know why. He's such a fucker. Past Elizabeth didn't like him either.
I was like, I think I know what night you wrote this episode, but...
Yeah, no, I just fucking hate him. So, he was found guilty. Wanda flipped on him, and she got a reduced sentence. So she's out now. Because she's also a fucker, so fuck her. And during the trial, Elizabeth got on stand and gave her testimony against him and just fucking demolished him.
Good.
Yeah.
Do you have any tidbits from the trial?
No, just that, like, he would act like religious mumbo jumbo, and, like, you could kind of tell he was with it, but he wasn't, but he definitely was. I don't know. He's just an asshole. I hope he dies. I hope he stubs his toe today. So, Elizabeth has gone on to write a book and become a huge victim rights advocate.
Of course.
She says she's had so many survivors come up to her and tell her how meaningful it is that she has, like, spoken out and shared her story. And, like, she's the poster girl for survival. She, like, and for survivors, because she she fucking handled it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
she like got her shit together.
And she played an active role in her escape. Like that's a
yeah. Like she does say that like, because she gets victim blamed a lot for like, why didn't you tell the homicide detective it was you? Like, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And like she was like, I was so worried they weren't gonna believe me, and then I was so afraid what they were gonna do to me.
Yeah.
Like, so she's a huge victim rights advocate. She's really fucking cool. And she's also now married with kids.
Oh.
Her husband, actually, they met when they were on mission together. Which, gross, but whatever. Her husband actually didn't know
who she was.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And just
did he like go home after the first date and Google her and like be like, holy crap.
No, I think he was from Scotland. So he guess he didn't know it, and he, but, like, he's, like, this super dorky-looking guy, and they seem really happy together.
Aww.
And she moved on with her life, and now she gives talks about how important it is that, like, you don't blame yourself, because you couldn't, you...
Yeah.
There's nothing you could, like, it's not your fault that someone's your abuser.
Freeze, fight, or flight, baby.
She's, like, super fucking healthy, mentally, and I don't understand how, but, like... I'm so glad she is, and I'm yeah. so glad she's doing what she can to make the world a better place, because she's really fucking awesome.
Cool.
So that is Elizabeth Smart.
Good story, babe.
Thanks.
I'm very proud of you. We hope that you enjoyed this episode of Shared Spirits. It is a no-bones day. We're going to go continue to be no-bones people, and we will meet you up for episode 40?
I think so. We're in episode 40 now.
Episode 40 for a discussion of Stockholm Syndrome and...
I think
kidnappings.
I know, and I want to talk a little bit more deeply next week about the female kidnappers' roles in this.
Yeah, because you kept on saying things about how Wanda was a horrible person, but I didn't really hear a lot about Wanda in that episode. So maybe I'll do some digging into the female psyche and.
No, I need to find a little bit more on Wanda. I think she just mostly like
was there and
she
didn't
was
stop
there
anything.
And didn't stop it and like, because it's not like they like. They didn't torture Elizabeth in the same way that Colleen yeah. Stan was tortured.
I don't know.
We'll
but
talk about it.
To find out our thoughts on said topic, you will have to tune in next week. We are also in the middle of making a transition of when we release our episodes. So if you've noticed, we haven't been releasing regularly on Fridays. It is more likely that our release date is going to be Saturdays or Sundays. It'll happen.
We're shooting for weekends before Monday.
It'll happen. But that way you have a fresh podcast to start off your week at work. And you will hear us in your head over the weekend. But for now, we're going to go make some dinner and bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Shared Spirits podcast, created and co-hosted by Elizabeth Gay and Marissa Petticord.
Follow us on Instagram at Shared Spirits Pod, on Twitter at Shared Spirit Pod, or email us at sharedspiritspod@gmail.com.
Music by Bobby Gay and creative design consultants by Brynzeal and Catherine Gay.
Our podcast is recorded on Anchor.